if there's anyone here who has a desire to increase their mindfulness during the day, I have prepared a Dharma talk for you. And it's funny, I've been teaching this class online. I don't do the lectures or prepare the study materials, but I communicate with each of my 20 students once a week, see how they're doing, answer questions. And a lot of them start out with week one, when it's supposed to be paying attention to the breath, wanting to know that how they can be more mindful during the day. And each week they ask that question, and I keep saying, the last week we're going to do that. So this Dharma talk is about daily life practice and how it can be done. And the very first step is go through the first 5 weeks of the 6-week course. Spend time coming back to the breath, being with it, developing a skill in focusing attention on something and holding it there for as long as possible. The goal is as long as possible, not longer than you can do it, but as long as you can do it. Because it's going to slip, and then you get to practice the other half of what mindfulness is, which is the ability to come back to awareness of what your intention was when you sat down. That you wanted to stay present with this being here, part of which is a body. And Buddhism has 6 senses. 5 of those senses are in the body. Only 1 is elsewhere, and that's the mind. So being aware of the body is something that really needs to be developed, both in meditation and then in trying to be mindful during the day. So this ability to direct the attention is fundamental to ending suffering or dukkha. It's fundamental to being fully present in your life. And that's why we should meditate every day. It's the critical skill. And for people who are currently kicking themselves that they don't meditate every day, let's take a look at the definition of meditation. And if it's a 45-minute session, you may want to rethink that. Because a lot of people find it very difficult to do that. And in order to ensure that you meditate every day, you might want to reduce the amount of time that you think is necessary to meditate. Now, the day may come, the year or whatever, when you really want to sit longer. And please do. But let it come from, you know, a feeling of, this is what I want. This is where my life is going. Rather than a feeling that if I were a really good Buddhist, I would sit for an hour every day. The critical thing with meditating daily is that you stop focusing on external factors in your experience and bring the attention back to where your awareness resides. So the four foundations of mindfulness.
The body.
Feelings. How we like or don't like what we're experiencing. Our thoughts as they come and they go. And the longer lasting but still impermanent moods. And then there's the stuff that's just stuck to the walls of our minds, like attitudes, assumptions, values. You know, some of our values could use a good dusting off, an annual exam, to see if we really still want to hold them. Because otherwise, we're probably clinging to them. And that's the source of suffering. So a willingness to look at the often overlooked aspects of the mind is really crucial in being mindful and reducing the amount of suffering in our lives. You know, both for ourselves and for other beings. Daily life practice is wonderful. It changes the quality of life. But it is not a substitute for stopping what we're doing in our day and bringing the attention back to our being embodied awareness. Until we're very advanced, that daily stopping and being with our essential experience is going to continue to be necessary. And even those who are really advanced, most of them still meditate. Buddha did after he was fully enlightened. He'd travel around with the Sangha of monks and they'd get to a place to rest and he'd go off, find a good tree root, the ancient zafus, find a good steady position and spend some time meditating. It's the best way I know of to relax and regroup. My teacher is Gil Fronsdal, and he says that developing the ability to be present for our emotional life, but not entangled with it, allows us to live with greater ease and satisfaction. And I've certainly found this to be true. If we come to each of our experiences, or even a whole lot of them, with an attitude of acceptance. Whatever this is, I'm accepting that. I'm accepting whoever is in front of me, whatever they're experiencing and doing. I'm not necessarily approving of it, but I'm accepting it. And then I find the wisest response possible. That is so much easier than trying to make what is something that isn't. We're seeing a lot of this in American politics these days. It doesn't work there, and it doesn't work in our daily lives. The second verse of the Dhammapada says, all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. We just pull it along with us. That mind that is peaceful because it's able to just be with whatever is. All right, that's the theory. And then there are a lot of brass tacks that are involved with daily life practice. Because we're asking ourselves to do something contrary to what we've been doing since we probably were fetuses, which is dealing with the external environment, making that the paramount concern for us. So we're retraining the mind, we're regrouping, we're pointing it in a very different direction. We're establishing basically new habits for the mind. And we have to start out small, just like we start out in meditation by staying with the breath for as long as it's possible for us right now, today. So we return to mindfulness during the day as much as we can today. And I think the best way to begin to turn this lifelong habit around is the things that we're doing, using them as entry points into a mindful life. For example, almost all of us wake up at the beginning of our day, which is a terrific time for our first experience of mindfulness. Especially if we make a decision not to just hit the floor running, but to spend some moments, maybe taking a few mindful breaths, noticing what the state of the mind is. If we've had a dream during the night, maybe there's a aftertaste, an emotion, or a train of thought that's there when we wake up. And definitely, we can pay attention to how the body gets out of the bed. My back was badly wrenched a few weeks ago, and I cannot avoid paying attention to how my body gets out of bed. It's a very complicated mechanical thing. Roll over onto the side, bring the knees up. Just watch the body, how it does this thing that it's been doing every day, and be inside it while it's doing it. Then there are all the little things that I think of as life maintenance. Brushing the teeth, washing the face, getting some exercise. For those of us who take medications, just being aware, this is something that I'm doing, I'm adding to my system for my benefit. And there's some gratitude there, some respect for my taking care of myself. I try to be mindful when I'm dressing, but I'm so busy trying to figure out what to wear. I mean, I really should have been a monastic because I don't have to deal with any of that. But I understand that even if it's one item of clothing that you possess, there's still all that draping it around you. So, you know, which leg does go in first? Just notice, again, the body mechanics, the feeling of putting the fabric on the body. You know, I've got a pretty long list here. And I'm going to, it's an outline. I'm going to put it on the Sangha website and on my own website, RebeccaDixon.org, so that you can refer to it at any time. I'm not suggesting that you are mindful in all of these things tomorrow or 2 weeks from now, but pick one. Make it your thing. Most of my students in the online course pick brushing their teeth because their parents just drilled it into them. They've got to do it every day, so it's convenient. But simple chores are good, too. If you don't wash your dishes, I suspect that you put them into a machine, and that's a great opportunity to stop rushing and pay attention. Ironing, shopping. Shopping is challenging. That's kind of like year three, I think, because I hate shopping. I've got so much attitude about it, and there's an awful lot going on inside me, particularly when the store is crowded and people are not being considerate. I want to educate them. And it's hard to resist. Eating. What a wonderful opportunity for mindfulness, because it's so much healthier. I know people who just really bolt their food. One of my students said that she thought that she had really good table manners until someone mentioned, you know, you're throwing that food down your throat. Why are you in such a hurry? And she said it was just amazing. Within a week, the indigestion that had been plaguing her for years went away. One of the reasons why we have hobbies is to take a break. But it's so much more relaxing if we do it just slowly. Here's the ironic thing, kind of counterintuitive, that if we do these tasks slowly, we're going to be doing them more efficiently. And we're not going to be losing any time. It's something that students have really marveled at many times, that slowing down actually lets them go faster. When the phone rings, to be mindful of that. Maybe let it ring again. And notice the state of mind that you're bringing to this potential conversation. And the same is true with email. Before you click on it and have it hit you in the face, generally we know who it's from. But just notice how we're feeling. And definitely make note of that before we answer. It makes wise speech so much easier. Walking from the car or the bus or whatever into the door of our destination. From one room to another. What is it we're walking into? And how do we feel about it? What's going on here? Just noticing the attitude and paying attention. Driving, my favorite. It's a lot like shopping, but less opportunity to educate people. Stoplights and signs. Just sitting there, coming to a stop. It's a lot like the basics of meditation. We've stopped. Do we spend that time being impatient? Or coming back to a place of peace, of acceptance? Oh boy, it's red. I get to just sit here for a minute. And in conversations, particularly the listening part of it, which is never the most interesting, but noticing how you feel as you're absorbing this other being's reaching out to you. Not just their information, but also their affect. What's going on with them? And then what's going on with you when you start to speak? That's kind of a long list, but does anybody have any other activities during the day that work for them to be mindful? Yes.
I'm a lap swimmer, and I practice being mindful when I'm swimming because I feel like it's, you know, all the meditating conditions are there. I'm breathing, I'm counting my breaths, and I'm aware of my body. But I'm really lately trying very hard to be very aware of what the water feels like on my skin as I'm moving through it, and I'm really trying... making an effort to practice mindfulness during my lap swimming, counting, and oh, that's three more to go, or, you know, number 15.
So during swimming, and I love that about going beyond just the breathing, but make it more of the daily life activity, the environment, the water, the feeling on the skin. Yes?
I've got a couple. Practicing yoga is obviously very embodied and makes me very much aware, and I'm not thinking about other things, just how my body is feeling and getting it into the right position and what feels good, what doesn't. And the other one's more of a technique than an activity. It's I used to have a bracelet that would vibrate every hour and a half, and during that time I would, you know, just stop and recollect my breath. How's my body feeling? How are my emotions right now? What am I thinking? And it's a reminder, and the bracelet's since broken a little bit. I haven't taken it in to get repaired, but I know that you can set your alarm on your iPhone or whatever smartphone you've got, maybe for every 2 hours to go off during the day, and that might be a way to come back every couple of hours to just kind of reset.
Good. Yes.
Did you mention cooking?
Did I mention cooking?
Yeah.
No, because I never do it. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I find cooking can be a great time to be mindful and chopping things and paying attention to, like, if I want the cucumber slices to be really narrow or larger or whatever, and mixing things. And I find that if I don't rush and am mindful, I usually feel the food tastes better. Now, whether that's just my imagination, or maybe it's that I was mindful, so I'm noticing it and I'm paying more attention to the ingredients or anything. But I actually think it makes a difference in the even the taste when I prepare it mindfully.
I have no doubt that coming to the meal in a state of mindfulness will enhance it. So these activities that we find to develop our mindfulness in daily activities, we'll probably need to change them up every so often to keep it fresh. And if we do this every day, you'll notice that it'll start to spread. You'll have a number of activities without even deciding today that you're going to do one that maybe you did months ago. And then you'll do the one that's this week's activity. And there'll be all these little places in your daily life that you're used to being mindful. And this reminds me of a dear friend of mine, my first best friend, FBF. Anyway, when I was a kid, an Irish girl with very pale complexion and a lot of freckles, really good-looking freckles, but she hated them. And she would complain about them all the time, except she would try to improve her own attitude by saying, well, if they all got together, I'd have a great tan. So the same thing is true with these activities that we do mindfully, is they'll grow, and they will start to grow together, and the day will become primarily mindful. We've already had a suggestion of prompts to come back to mindfulness. One is the bracelet that Amy mentioned, or the timer. Kind of a beginner's trick is a pad of post-its. Just put them where you're going to notice them during the day. And sounds, again, the electronic timer, or things that occur naturally. And you know, a lot of these things, even the activities, they can be pleasant or unpleasant. And the better, really, in a way, is if they're unpleasant. Because the more we can get over our opinions of what is or isn't pleasant, then the less unpleasantness there is in our lives. So for me, I used to just go nuts with the sound of jackhammers. And I started focusing on that, just accepting that sound, being mindful with it, and now it doesn't bother me at all. You know, a great trigger to come back with is being upset. What a better time to just recognize, okay, I'm upset. And that's mindfulness. Now, it may not go any further than that, but, you know, give yourself credit for recognizing that you're upset. And eventually, you know, like those freckles, it'll start to spread, and eventually you'll even be able to take a deep breath, maybe not be so upset, relax, and avoid acting out of that difficult emotion. The Buddha provided us with a number of big post-its, and they are engaging in certain activities in a way that we don't harm ourselves or other beings. It's often referred to as ethics. Can we be kind in our speech, action, and economic activity? Can we avoid physically harming other beings, or doing so through our speech, or by stealing things, abusing sexual energy? Boy, is that the bonfire of the vanities these days? Abusing intoxicants. The underlying intention here is to be kind, and the more we can exercise that, the easier mindfulness is in daily life, and the more satisfying it'll make our lives. And then there are the hindrances. Days when we're just restless, or we're half in a torpor, a stupor. The other day I had half of my brain gone. And there are a couple of ways to work with this. And one is just bring in what's called an antidote. And the other is focus on it. Get to know it. RAIN is the acronym for this technique. Recognize, you know, I'm not really very energetic today. Accept it. Investigate it. How does it feel physically and emotionally? What kinds of thoughts do I have around it? What stories am I telling that's perpetuating this? And do I have an urge as a result of this to do something or to avoid something? Is it motivating me in some way? Then there's desire and aversion. And we can ask the same questions about that. And we certainly should about doubt, which is the fifth hindrance. That's what immobilizes us when we need to make an important decision. There's nothing wrong with being indecisive. But at some point, doubt needs to be faced. And to understand what's going on in the mind and the heart may very well help us reach a decision and possibly even the right one. And then finally, the N. It's not personal. There is this wonderful bonus to a kind and accepting attitude toward life. And that is that we get to watch it, not so much from a distance, but with a kind of invulnerability. We definitely feel what's going on, but the element of threat, of alienation, isn't there. It's essentially not going to do us in, whatever it is. Doesn't threaten who we are. Because it's not about who we are. It isn't something we're attached to. So I'm sure there are other reminders that you all have used, and I'll invite you to talk more about that and activities, how you incorporate mindfulness into your daily life. But I want to end my talk with a quote from Pema Chodron. She says, "If your everyday practice is open to all your emotions, to all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do it, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then you'll understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught." Thank you.